And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you have just tuned in. A caller says, hope we don't go down the way England is going and not tell parents anything about what they're teaching our children. Anyone can inquire as to what's being taught of their children. Though I do think parents do need to take a bit more control. We really, really need a bus service in the town. I presume this is Letterkenny. Every town in Ireland with the same population has a proper town bus service. St. Connell's Hospital is the perfect example of dereliction. HSC is the massive property, but still rent property from private sectors. Well, a proper bus service, a loss-making one that runs regularly and people can trust it and know it's there and then start availing of it. So we were talking then about what the rules were in relation to dogs on blue flag beaches. Because a year's passed and people thought it was in, but it was still in consultation. And there was a bit of confusion last year. I was confused. I'm not saying there was mass confusion. So thanks to Caroline here, we checked up what exactly the rules and regs are at the moment. So new rules came into force during the bathing season, which started on June the 1st. To control beach access for dogs and other pets, assistance dogs not restricted. So from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day from the 1st of June until the 15th of September, dogs are only allowed in pet-friendly zones on 10 blue flag beaches and two other beaches that it's hoped will gain blue flags in the coming years. So Rosnaula, Merva, Fintra, Nairnport Nu, on Carrick Finn, Killahoey, Marble Hill, Downings, Port Salon, Rathmullen, Lisfannan and Coldaff. Dogs are not allowed on these beaches between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. until the 15th of September. That doesn't mean they're not allowed on lead, off lead. They're not allowed on the beaches at all. There are some designated areas. Is it clear? Are you a beachgoer with a dog? Have you seen these designated areas of the beach or areas that are designated as not being dog friendly? The restricted areas will include the area supervised by beach lifeguards plus a buffer either side. So as of now, just to recap, dogs, whether they're on a lead or off a lead or other pets for that matter, unless they're assistant dogs, guide dogs, etc., they're not allowed on the beach between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Merva, Rosnaula, Fintra, Port Nú, Narran, Carrick Finn, Killahoey, Marble Hill, Downings, Port Salon, Rathmullen, Lisfannan and Coldaff. So there you go. It's clear as that. Now, in terms of enforcement, is it the dog warden? Is it the Garda? Is it council staff? Is it anybody? Has there been any level of enforcement? Do you know any of this information? 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. A very special happy birthday to Tina Moore in Lurgybrack. Lots of love from sister Sarah and niece in Oma. Could you please play a birthday request on the 9 till noon show for my sister Tina Moore, Lurgybrack. Tina, you're very popular. Celebrating a birthday today. Lots of love from her sister Sarah and her nieces and nephew in Oma. Thanks a million. That comes in from Sarah, as I mentioned, her sister. No problem at all. And our own Aisling McGeever is celebrating her birthday today. Big roundy one, I think, is it? I'm not quite sure. Happy birthday, Aisling, from all of us and your family, I'm sure, who didn't bother texting in to wish you a happy birthday. So I presume maybe their batteries are flat or something. I'm sure it's not that they don't care. Anyway, couldn't be that. Surely, right, back after these. And you know what? The reason I said that, I got about 6 thumbs up when I talked about emojis, and I said the thumbs up emoji annoyed me. I got 6 of them. So there you go. The favour has been returned. Now, a very good morning to Michael, Rosemary, Annie, John, Paul, Charlie, Sally, Kathleen, Marie, all amongst the hundreds watching our live stream. And just to remind you that you can watch this programme every day for 3 hours on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That's across all your devices, your smart TV and your Fire Stick as well. We're also on Facebook, Highland Radio News and Sport, or Highland Hub. And there's We Watch Live on our website. You can click and watch in browser too, and you can see the majority of our guests over the course of each show. Just to remind you too, if you have any views about the football at the weekend, heartbreak for the ladies of Donegal, heartbreak for the men of Derry, and Monaghan also probably feeling a little bit heartbroken this morning still. Brendan Devenny is going to be joining us after 11 for a chat about all the weekend's GE action and also previewing Highland Radio's DL Debate podcast, which is available for you a little later on today. But on to other matters now. And the CEO of Alone is Sean Moynihan. Thank you very much for joining us, Sean. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning. Good to be here.
We are seeing a direction of traffic now, and it was foreshadowed. We're seeing more and more automated checkout machines, not just in the big stores, but in smaller stores in, you know, places in smaller communities. And older people were polled, and quite a significant amount of them are not happy about this for different reasons, of course. So, Sean, what are older people telling you?
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, I suppose the polls show what the customer wants. And I suppose traditionally, private companies are good at providing services in line with what the customer wants. But some of the automation that goes on is sort of leaving some people out at the moment or not providing them the service the way they want it. So whether that's, you know, the utility companies, we do an awful lot of work supporting older people that if something goes wrong or a poor reading or whatever, trying to get access to a person to sort out problems can be really difficult. And we also obviously have that problem in shops where everything's coming automated. And remember, 20% of the population, over a million people, are over 60. And then another 13, 14% of people may have a disability. So they might have different customer service needs. That way, we think organization should be listening to what the customer needs and how the customer wants to be serviced.
And Sean, can I say too, of course, this is a survey of older people, but I would say it's probably, you know, it's probably representative across all age groups. A lot of people are finding the whole shopping experience more difficult than it needs to be, a sterile experience. I think more and more people are moving to getting shopping delivered to their homes. I mean, I know more people than I would have expected to that now don't go to the shop at all. They just get it delivered to the door wherever they're living. I don't know if that's, it's not, it doesn't feel good for society, that does it?
Well, I think it's part of a much wider conversation, and I think this is sort of, sometimes it's these smaller elements of things, small but important elements, is, you know, there was a report out 6 weeks ago that says Ireland is actually the loneliest place in Europe. So it's part of that disconnect of things that are disappearing in our communities, relationships are disappearing. Loneliness across all age groups is high and highest in Europe. And ultimately, that means poor physical health and poor mental health. And on top of that is it's also part of the conversation about an ageing society, where ultimately is we now have a million people over 60 and rising. So ultimately, maybe transport systems, housing systems, shops, everything needs to adapt to maybe that the customer is changing.
I've said it on this show before, and I'll say it again right now. Older people are... some older people might start feeling now that they're a problem, they're an inconvenience. If you talk about issues in health, it's about our aging population. And then when you see how our towns are being developed and designed, are they really age friendly? We're seeing, for instance, older people more inclined to use cash are being told that they can't pay at the turnstiles for a football match. The local Garda station is shut down. And it's like death by a thousand cuts. But the issue I have with all of this, Sean, is that it's presumed that this is just the way it's going. We're deciding all of this. Policy is deciding this. Our attitude, we don't have to go down this route. We can actually say, do you know what? We actually don't want everything automated. We can actually be a society where we actually still interact and serve each other and laugh with each other and talk to each other. We don't have to do this.
I think that's the insight. As I said, it rolls up into that wider conversation around loneliness and everything else. Is that where we're driving? Because, as I said, the loneliness rates among young and old are united. Not everybody wants to go and live the way we're doing. So I think this is part of the conversation. You know, there are wonderful things technology can do in health services, etc. You know, and we're using technology to help people age at home. But the reality is in different scenarios, it's not what people want. And as you say, we decide the direction of travel. And that's why conversations about how do we change, you know, what are the housing needs of an older population? We find it really hard to get traction on that. We have a pre-budget launch last week, and we're really finding hard to get traction on some of the issues that affect older people, even though it's 20% of the population. It is a bit like, well, this is the way things are, and we've got to keep driving in that direction. And we think we need to be having a conversation and decide collectively what way we want it to be.
Yeah, and it will come to a stage, I imagine, where big shops, supermarkets will start saying, hold on, yeah, there's a market here. We can start appealing to older people and have different style checkouts, you know, where there isn't a rush or what have you. I think that's happening already in some other countries. But it's crazy because we're going into the direction that we're going to start sort of saying, right, we now can exploit this and attract these people back. And I think, Sean, one thing we shouldn't forget is that hopefully more of us will live older than ever did before. This is going to be, if you're listening now and you're 40 or 50 or 30, this is your future as well. Look at the way things are going now and look at the way the world might be when you're over 60. Is that the way you want to go? Now, we all need to buy in on this rather than people like yourself, Sean, very, very well, of course, as always, advocating on behalf of older people. Society needs to take more control over this situation as well, I think. I mean, back to that no cash for GEA games things. People huffed and puffed about that and they were ignored, just ignored, you know. And is that really the way we want to go, whereby big organisations, big companies make decisions and we just have to like it or lump it?
I think actually your prediction, or I'm hopeful your prediction, that what will happen is, you know, they'll try all the automation and then they get pushback and then somebody will realise actually customer service is where the added value is. Customer service is where you attract the, you know, whether it's older people or younger people or people with disabilities, you know, they attract people. But I think that there will be a pushback against this. I think some of the great stuff around technology and medicine and healthcare, absolutely fabulous. But in how we live our everyday lives, if we, you know, if we cut out the human, we have a phrase in here where we use technology. So we're using technology to drive human interaction, to learn more about the needs of older people and to respond to that. And I think in societal terms, that's really what we need to be using technology for, to enhance people's lives, not to cut down their human contact, not to cut down their levels of satisfaction, not to increase their stress, but to make life better.
Yeah, and you know, this is not just a feeling either. And you mentioned this at the start, Sean, and I just want to focus on it towards the end. Like, loneliness is not just, it is a feeling, of course, but it's the impact it can have on people's mental and physical well-being as well. They are linked, which then in turn has an impact on, you know, people's independence or their dependence on the health service or what have you. Again, it's all very much in our interests, if not for the care of other people, then for the functioning of society, that again, everyone takes note of these types of conversations and where we're going.
I think, look, if you were talking now, I mean, I represent an organisation that in the first 6 months of the year worked with 22,000 older people across the whole country, every corner of the country. And I can tell you the levels of loneliness are really high. The medical evidence is that it'll damage and your mental and your physical health and you will die younger is absolutely there. But if you were interviewing the Samaritans or Jigsaw or a lot of other organisations that work with different age groups or different people that with presenting needs, they would be telling you the same thing. And it's something we need to talk about and we need to look at, see how our rural towns and villages and how our urban are going to work better for people. We understand technology is going to keep coming in, but how is it going to serve people rather than lead to a situation where people are isolated, lonely, cut off, unsupported and don't feel cared for?
Sean, thanks for your time this morning. Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone there. A texter says, hi, Greg, I just want to say I have a relation who's very ill, possibly end of life at Letterkenny University Hospital. We called in yesterday. May I add, not at visiting time, but the staff in Medical 5 were so lovely. They brought tea, coffee, sandwiches and biscuits and treated us like royalty. They were busy, but took the time to be kind. They get so much negative reviews, I had to tell you our experience. God bless them all. Thanks, Greg. And indeed, and just to clarify, often the negativity is based on their working environment, not the great care and treatment provided by the staff. Harry, good morning to you. Are you there? No, Harry's not through yet. Is he? No. We'll get Harry through in a second. Could you ask Sean, has any progress been made on the Fair Deal scheme for home care? That comes in from Connell. Connell, maybe that's just quite an important issue that we might focus separately on that, because a lot of people might be interested in that. Hi, Greg. Oh, shall we go to Harry now? Hi, Harry. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How's it going?
I'm all right. I'm good. Right, Harry, what's your experience of using self-service tills?
Not great, but I had a problem with my tap card, and had used the money came out of my account four times, and the tap, something happened with the till. And just lucky, I'm on a wheelchair, and the person carried me, had money with them, and I paid for my shopping, because they actually took nearly €150 out of my account and left me limbo then all week. I couldn't get money out of the account then for 2 weeks because they didn't give me the money back. And they called it a ghost account then because something happened with the tap card. There was nothing wrong with the card at all,
But every time you tapped, the money was coming out, but the till wasn't saying that you'd paid. So you effectively ended up paying four times, plus then with cash at a regular till.
Yeah.
Was it tough to get the money back?
Took 10 working days.
Wow.
And, I was depending on it. Lucky the boy cares for me. I would have been, that week I would have had no money. You couldn't get nothing out of the bank. Only for the person who cared for me,
Yeah. That's you finished with the tap and go now. You're a cash cash man.
Cash man, no.
You know what I mean?
It's no joke, you depend on it, that's crazy how they can do it,
I've been, I don't use cash much.
I'll be honest, that happened to me 3 weeks ago, and I was between running from one shop to the bank, and one was blaming the other, were taking money, but actually it was the Bank of Ireland that took the money out of the account,
Yeah. But you got it back eventually. But as you say, though, that was €150 odd that you didn't have access for 10 days. And, things are tight. I mean, that's through no fault of your own.
It's left me hungry all week again,
Yeah. Okay. Right. But from now on, as I say, I was going to say I would tap away. And I'm pretty good at keeping track of it, if you know what I mean. But I have been caught out a couple of times where the phone didn't tap properly and I had no cash and no backup. So I always try and carry a bit of cash with me now myself, Harry.
Well, I advise people to have cash because the simple reason is the technology doesn't really work half the time,
Yeah. All right. that's your experience for sure.
I got back then, I got back from the bank.
All right, good stuff. And thankfully you had someone with you too that was able to help you out with the cash. They had the cash with them. All right, Harry.
Just imagine that happened.
Of course,
just
what would you do?
Just imagine that happened. Somebody with me,
Yeah, exactly. You'd have had no shopping and having paid for it four times effectively. Exactly. All right, Harry, listen, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate that. So that's Harry's experience. Not pleasant. And it's kind of in some people it wouldn't be embarrassing, but for others, when you tap... And sometimes you've reached the amount of times you can tap your card and then you have to put the card in, or if it's on your phone, and it can all get very embarrassing at the till. But that was Harry's experience at a self-service till. Now, we are joined on the programme by a legend of music and broadcasting, and you're going to have an opportunity to see him up here very soon. It's Ronan Collins. Ronan, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to talk to you this morning.
How are you getting on?
Very, very well. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for the description of being a legend. I was always thinking in my lifetime, legends were generally people who were very old and past their prime.
Well, but, I think it's...
I don't know where I fall into
those. Well, neither. I think it's a phrase that's often thrown around with good intent, but when you... maintain one of the longest running radio shows on Ireland's national station, pulling in 250,000 listeners. I think that sort of gets you into that category quite comfortably.
Well, thank you for the compliment. Thank you.
In terms of how people know you, obviously, primarily, is it the case that people would associate you with the radio show? And others are going to know your musical background as well, but is that what's the balance there in terms of how?
I think the fact that I was around for so long, and I started off in music, and I got into radio, and I was lucky enough to be able to continue with my fascination for music in all the programs that I did down through the years. And then in television, you know, I had a television career for about 20 years. I did game shows, famously Play the Game. And then I did the lotto draws, where I became very much a part of people's households for a few years, when everybody used to look at the lotto draw, when it was only available on television at 8:05 on a Wednesday night or a Saturday night. And I became synonymous with that. So I think all of those things together kind of turn you into a very familiar sight and sound. And I was very comfortable with it. It was great.
Yeah. And how has life been without the regular commitment of the One Hour Show? Of course, people can still hear the Collins Collection on bank holidays and your work on RTE Gold. It's a huge change in your life and routine, is it, stepping away from an everyday show? Has it?
Absolutely. It has been a great change, but it's been an extraordinarily happy change. I mean, I'm into my 7th month now. 7 months since I've been on daily radio, and I haven't missed the grind of the drive-in every day, because I don't live in Dublin where I was broadcasting. Yes, I had the facility to do it from my home if I wanted to, but I never did that. I always felt that part and parcel of the job was going to the station and doing it. So that daily commute of 150 kilometres every day is gone. And I have a different rhythm to my life. I don't seem to be any less busy with things. I've so much still to do, but I think a lot of it is personal and a lot of it is more leisure, if you like. But I'm still working. I'm doing gigs at night with the bands. And as you mentioned, I have a commitment with RTE Gold, which takes up my Tuesday. And once a month then for RTE Radio 1 for the Collins Collection. And we've had amazing guests on that. And we're actually recording another one next week for the bank holiday Monday on the 7th of August. It'll be Christy Moore, just me and him.
Yeah, and it was kind of an interesting departure from the daytime show, because, of course, I'm not saying you were, but you want to be at pains, don't you, to say, no, Mike, this is going to be my focus now. I'm not going away. I'm not retired. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be taking around the back of the house or anything, you know what I mean? So it's a case of getting the message across that, yes, you're not going to necessarily hear me regularly every day, every weekday at 12, but, you know, I've got so much else on and time to afford my own interests a little bit more of their attention.
Absolutely. And the other thing about it is that my career for certainly the last 20 years has involved live music very much as well. And that was something that I wasn't moving away from. But I didn't feel it would be right at the end of last year to say I'm giving up the daily program on RTE Radio 1, but I'm going to do this, that and the other, because that wasn't what it was about. It was about leaving something behind that I had done for a long time. And I needed, as you get older, you need a bit more time if you want to focus on other things. You can't do everything that you want to do forever and ever. So that was why I made the change. And it also gave the opportunity for somebody new and younger to come in and see if they can have a go at it and try and get as much out of it as I did. And if they do, well, they'll have a ball.
Yeah, I hope so. But it kind of felt like, you obviously are able to make your own decisions, but why? You know, it was such a familiar voice, a familiar sound. And but anyway, things change, and there's always a point in time where things change.
Well, there was also the thing that, you know, it was an opportunity for me to make my decision myself and do it my own way. And in the broadcasting business, because I was a freelancer, an independent contractor, of whom we've heard so much of late, but I didn't have a staff job in RTE, never wanted one, never required one, always wanted to be able to do other things as well. And it was an opportunity for me last year after my thought processes. I was 70 last October. And I said, wouldn't this be a great time to just park this and focus on other things and have time to do
what you want to
more of what I want to
exactly.
do. That's why I did it.
Yeah, a quick question, and it's been talked about so much of late, and I want to move on to the gig, but looking, when you, I mean, obviously with the love and affection you have for RT, it must sadden you to see the reputational damage that's been caused. It will recover. Look, time moves on and things move on and things change. As much surprised you of it, do you welcome the fact that maybe they're starting to talk about cultural change there, or do you have a view on it, Ronan? As I say, we won't dwell on it. I want to talk about the music, but...
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the mix of public service broadcasting and commercial broadcasting has always been strange bedfellows. And I think it has proven to be a difficulty for RTE, and we're seeing things now. Yes, it is sad what's going on, but in the words of the great Gay Byrne, this too will pass. And out of the embers or the ashes or whatever, you know, RTE will rise again. And I just hope that there's no victims in this.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. Right, Ronan. On Wednesday, the 2nd of August at 8 p.m. in the Waterfront Hotel, there's a brilliant show. Talk to the people now about what they can enjoy. What is happening in the beautiful venue that is the Waterfront?
Well, I can tell you that this is the achievement of an ambition I've had for years. I've never been at the Mary from Dunloe Festival, first of all. I've had a great association with Donegal through the years. Right back to the 1970s when I was up there with Dickie Rock, and we used to play the Borderland in Muff or the Pavisi in Donegal, and we played in Letterkenny and Killybegs and just everywhere, all over Donegal with the bands. And we used to actually go up there and stay in Donegal town, and you would do nearly a full week of gigs all around the county. And that's how big Donegal was in terms of the music thing. And of course, Donegal always maintained its great association with music through its own artists down through the years. And Daniel thought it might have been a good idea that maybe the show band memories could be brought up, and realized that I was doing a show, which is basically show band memories. Now, we have our Reeling in the Show Band Years tour, which we do in January and February. But this show is Ronan Collins sings show band hits with special guests. And we've Brendan Shine and Sandy Kelly. And the band are the Conquerors, who are just, they're just the best. If you look up the festivals this summer and see what band is backing all the great artists, it's the Conquerors. And they're a terrific band. And then having Brendan Shine on, Brendan has been just a legend for all those years. And Sandy herself, a great performer, a great show person. And it's just a great opportunity for us to bring this show and bring these memories and the songs to Donegal. And where better to do it? And I mean, the Mary from Dunloe Festival is legendary. You know, absolutely.
I always think things like this are brilliant, you know, for people in the local area who want to relive the brilliant memories and all. But there's going to be people from Germany or America or something that might be able to grab a ticket that just happened to be visiting. What an experience for those people will be as well. And the show band era, it comes up on programs like this all of the time. People have great memories, met their partners there, had their children about 9 months after a show, travel great distances. You know, you'd have people that would probably have attended every single show that you did while you were in Donegal, all over the county and all across the region. And still there's a new generation of people that appreciate and love the show band music too.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a great fun time. I wasn't in the bands in the 60s when they were in their heyday. It was the mid-70s before I got any chance to go on the road, as I mentioned, with Dickie Rock all those years ago, who was still doing the business in the 70s, as was Joe Dolan. And the thing had moved considerably from the ballrooms, and it was now incorporating hotels and concert venues. And it was Dickie and Joe who forged that particular thing of concert venues for essentially a show band act. But they were exceptional at the time. And I think looking back over the years, it was of huge social significance in the 1960s because there was nothing else to do except go to the show. And it became an extraordinary phenomenon, uniquely Irish. And it really had a great run from about 1960 until 1967, 68, thereabouts. And of course, the Miami show band murders kind of killed it. If you forgive the analogy, it killed the business completely, and you know, such a tragedy and such a terrible way for the whole thing to end. And what happened was bands continued on for a few more years, but then the social thing fizzled out completely. And other things moved in, clubs and discos and hotels with bars and music, and it went a different way. But that didn't eliminate people's desire to go and see the great stars. And there were other stars who emerged in the 70s then. And the great Red Hurley came out in the 70s and did the ballroom circuit, because that's what you did. The band from Cork called The Champions. Daniel O'Donnell appeared in the 1980s and did the ballrooms and the hotels for a long, long time before he became the biggest concert act of all. And it was quite extraordinary. And all the time, I think it was the Irish people's love of a few good old songs and a bit of crack. And that's basically what it is. It's very, I don't want to call it simple entertainment, but it's very straightforward. It's about good music, well played by good artists, and people enjoying it.
Yeah, and great musicians like the Conquerors. Do you have a song that you think for you is synonymous with the show band era?
Well, I'm lucky enough in that, you know, I mean, I've had a singing voice for years, and I sang when I was in the bands years ago. I drummed and sang at the same time, and never had the desire to be out the front. And when we started to revive the show band songs through the CDs that I compiled it must be 15 years ago now, they were a huge success, and there was a great demand from people. Can we see these stars? And so we ran shows with Dickie, and we had Brendan Boyer on the shows, and all the great stars through the years. But unfortunately, Dickie doesn't perform anymore. Brendan Boyer has passed. And we never got Joe Dolan, because Joe still had his career when we started our show band things. And then when Joe died in 2007, and Dickie had done the shows with us, it became difficult to kind of get the stars. There were less and less of them. So I started singing the songs myself. Now, how hard is my neck, Greg? Pretty hard. I'm well matured through the years. So I now sing songs that were Dickie Rocks. And thankfully, I have the opportunity to sing lots of Joe Dolan songs. And indeed, I have a separate show called Joe Dolan Songs that I do, where I'm not, I don't wear a white suit. I don't look like Joe Dolan. I don't act like Joe Dolan. But we sing the songs and we perform the songs that he had, not just his hits, but some of his great album tracks that he did. So asking me for my favorite songs is like asking me about who's my favorite child.
I tried to be clever and say, is there a song that you believe is synonymous with the era? But you figured me out, Ronan. Okay, well, listen, I'm going to remind listeners, as a big farewell to you, I'm going to remind listeners of when, where, and how to get their tickets. But it's been lovely chatting to you, and great to hear things are going so well for you. And we can't wait to have you up here in Donegal performing all the big show band tracks. Thanks so much, Ron.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Greg. And can I say just before I go, that it's a wonderful tick on my CV now to have appeared in Highland Radio, because, you know, people think that when you're in RTE for years, you're not aware of what's going on around the country. And I have always been very, very much aware of the success of Highland Radio in Donegal and up in the Northwest generally. So it was always a great boost to me whenever I got contact from people in Donegal to my radio program to know that they were listening to both of us.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks very much. And beautifully put. Thank you, Ronan. Ronan Collins there. Now, he sings the show band hits with the Conquerors show band, plus special guests Sandy Kelly and Brendan Shine. It's all part of the Mary from Dunloe Festival. And his gig is on Wednesday, the 2nd of August at 8 p.m. in the Waterfront Hotel, Dunloe. Tickets are €25 and they're on sale right now at the Waterfront Hotel reception, festival office and online. And it's going to be a cracker for people visiting the area, but for people from here who love that whole show band era and the tracks. And it's one after another are absolutely are brilliant. And it was lovely to speak to Ronan Collins there. As I say, you know, we do use the word legend quite a lot, but it certainly applies in that man's case. Now, as we heard earlier, a judge has written to several ministers demanding immediate and coordinated action to deal with an unprecedented crisis in the provision of placements for troubled children in the care of the state. Judge Dermot Sims, who has since retired from the Dublin Metropolitan District Court, sent the detailed letter accompanied by related documents after he had been told in court by the Child and Family Agency of an unprecedented crisis faced by Tusla. The judge specifically referred to unapproved and unregulated special emergency arrangements, suggesting there could be as many as 130 of these placements. Dr. Maria Corbett is Chief Executive of the Child Law Project and joins us on the programme now. Thank you for your time today.
Very good morning.
I'm wondering, is any of this information from the judge coming as a surprise? But I would imagine it's welcome that it's getting the spotlight through his commentary, Maria.
Yeah, the work that we do, the Child Law Project, we attend the child protection cases and around the country. So we've been doing this for 10 years, so we can see that these cases are appearing before the judges, and we believe that there's a growing frustration on the part of professionals and judges that the situation at the moment is very difficult for some children in care, whereby there aren't appropriate places for them. So the judge's letter very much reflects what we've been seeing, and we believe it is very important that he has done this, because we do need to, and that's why we've, with his permission, decided to publish his letter, and to make sure that the public understands that this is happening, and to try and garner some attention among the politicians, among the civil servants, to try and bring about a solution to the current issues.
Where do we begin with finding a solution, I wonder, Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously children in care, many of whom are placed in foster care, most 90%, and they have very ordinary lives. But for some children, they have significant needs. So one of the key places that we need to start is early supports and services for children. And those services are around disability, autism. They're around mental health issues, anxiety, self-harm, eating disorders, those kind of issues, as well as psychiatric issues and responding to the trauma that some children have experienced in their early lives. So what we've seen as part of the problem at the moment is we don't have the services in place. So we don't have the services. And then for those children who have more complex needs, we then don't have placements to provide them with a care setting. So the placements would be in foster care or residential care. So in terms of what we need to do, other than services and placements, we absolutely need interagency and interdepartmental action. So at the moment, we don't have a strategy or plan that brings together the relevant stakeholders, perhaps under a forum or some sort of a committee, with a clear roadmap as to what to do. So that would be one of the big things that we'd be asking for at the moment.
Yes, and it's important that we act on this really, really quickly, that, you know, this is not something that just falls off the news cycle. It has to be kept a priority. And I think really reaction from relevant ministers is really important now. Make some sort of a commitment, say that this is acknowledged, this is what we intend doing, this is unacceptable, this can't blow over, because for the people affected, it's not going to blow over, and there'll be more in the future as well.
Exactly. And I mean, what's happening at the moment when there isn't a placement, TUSA's putting in place an emergency setting. But for children, if they're a day in that setting, that might be one thing. But if they're a long term in that setting, it can be very damaging in terms of good outcomes for them. And one example, and we don't normally, when we publish cases, we don't normally name where they're from. We either say Dublin or outside of Dublin. But unusually, in one of the reports, we actually mentioned that the child from Dublin was placed in the Northwest. And he was placed there in a setting, it was a private setting. The providers decided to move him, but they only gave the social workers 2 days' notice. And he was moved then at 2 days' notice from the Northwest to the Southeast. And again, he was still far from his family in Dublin. So when you look at things like that, a sudden move, a shift across the country, two different places around the country, this boy was nine. Like a young child in a residential unit, clearly with needs that needed to be addressed in terms of education, therapeutic supports, and connecting with his, staying connected with his family and his community. So we need to do better than that.
Yeah, and it's not going to wash to say we're trying our best, resources are available, we're struggling in this area or that. You know, I mean, we can fix big problems here. We need to be solution focused, don't we? And not talking about excuses here. People need to put their hands up and say, this is actually completely unacceptable. We can't be treating particularly young people like this, or those involved in providing care, for an example, as well, because they're being caught out in certain circumstances too, I'm sure. This needs to be a hands-up job. It's unacceptable. And this is what we are actually going to do to try and eliminate this happening into the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a real need for, as a community, for more social workers, for more people to enter professions like social work, social care. We need a greater workforce in that area, all the therapeutic services. The money is there. It's actually more about putting the structures in. And very importantly, it's about interagency engagement. So the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, needs the support of the HSE, Disability and Mental Health Services. We also need the BARDs and others involved. So it really is about joining the dots. And as you say, we do need to engage with this now, because unfortunately for these children, it just creates a harder life journey for them when they've experienced difficult care placements.
Yeah. And unless the structures and supports are in there, the struggle to recruit people to foster is going to continue as well. And it's a cycle that needs to be broken. And as I say, there's lots of people with concerns about children into the future. Everyone needs to worry about what's happening right now as well and say, right, what can we do, or who can we contact to support these children, the people working with them? Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Maria Corbett, who's Chief Executive of the Child Law Project. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number there, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Thanks, by the way, to all of you who are messaging in, texting in, and we'll get to them, of course, as this morning wears on. But we do want to and have to take a break now for the news, and that's coming up just around the corner.